Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. A recent Stormy County Council meeting and some weekend arrests show that the tension and frustration in Ferguson following the August 9th shooting death of Michael Brown remains very close to the surface. While there has been some movement in attempts to satisfy concerns of African Americans in Ferguson and the region, many feel things are not moving fast enough. On today's program, we're going to talk about the situation in Ferguson, the ongoing concerns within the black community, as well as the short and long-term prospects with people who have been heavily involved since the August shooting. I'm Don Marsh. Joining me in studio, Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal. Her 14th district includes Ferguson. Janetta Elzey is a student at St. Louis Community College at Florissant Valley. Both were active during demonstrations and since, and have been outspoken on the Ferguson situation since day one. Ladies, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to see you again.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Senator, let me begin with you. Am I accurate in saying the tension and frustration level remains high?
Yes, absolutely. Even this weekend, when we had several events occur on Saturday, we became aware of certain things that had happened during the week, including one of my constituents who was shackled at her feet and arrested. Was told she had a warrant in Rolla, Missouri. She ended up in Rolla, Missouri, and it was a mistake. And she was targeted. She drives a very nice car, and she has a clean record. She had not been in jail any time prior in her life. And we're hearing a lot of those stories. The Ferguson Farmers Market, there was an incident there. And then there are other situations that we just keep hearing about every single day. And my intern, in fact, was run over, she and her little brother, who's 14 years old, by an individual who had an I Love You Ferguson t-shirt on and called them the N-word. That was all Saturday. And so tempers were pretty high, and people are still frustrated, and we just are looking for an out. We're looking for a win, and we haven't been winning in Ferguson in the last few days. I'm glad that City Council is taking a leadership role in having several town hall meetings. The more people are heard on an individual level, the better it's going to be for the community and the region.
Are you suggesting this thing is just being drawn out to a degree that where nothing really seems to be happening that we can see or know about?
There are a lot of things happening, but they're happening at the very grassroots level. I started an organization called Eyes on Ferguson. I'm in the office of Heal St. Louis that Antonio French is doing. He's allowing me to share that office space with him. And we're teaching classes about civic engagement. We are writing statements for every single council meeting, whether it's St. Louis County Council or City Council. I am teaching my constituents what civic engagement looks like and what their responsibilities are. It's not just the fault of police officers, but we have our own responsibilities that we have to own up to. And so that's how we are moving forward, by just doing some of the grassroots level kind of engagement to teach and encourage others so that we can have a pathway that's clear and nonviolent.
Janetta Elzey, let me turn to you. You're doing some writing as well. I mean, you haven't stopped paying a lot of attention to what's going on. Where do you stand with regard to the frustration level?
Saturday, I went down to the protest because I saw that one of my friends had gotten arrested for standing on the sidewalk, literally. And the police dragged her and arrested her. And they called some municipality that's nowhere near Ferguson to come walk her across the street to take her to jail. So I immediately got down there and just started documenting what was happening. I was very frustrated that a peaceful protest led to the street being blocked off by police officers from St. Louis County, St. Louis. I don't even know who all was down there.
It was
the
Ferguson,
state troopers.
Yes, state troopers, St. Louis County,
and Ferguson. And there was a helicopter, and they had guns, and they were on the mic. Yelling and telling people, you know, if this was a peaceful protest, you could continue to protest if you remain peaceful. So people were yelling back, myself included, it is a peaceful protest. The only people who aren't peaceful are you guys. The only people who aren't the only people who are blocking the streets are you all, you know, because they're saying don't block the street. No one's in the street. You're in the street. 30 police officers lining across the street with guns, and you're telling us to be off the street, and we're on the sidewalk. So it's very frustrating. It's almost like a psychological warfare, and it's very much like dealing with a bully. Like a bully will tell you, "Don't tell on me," while they're like hitting you, "Don't tell on me," or I'll tell on you, and I'll make up a lie, and that's what they're doing.
Is there ever any sense that the protests could be counterproductive because they do lead to arrests, they do lead to an increase in tension, and after they're over, things pretty much remain the same?
I've had a few conference calls with some great civil rights leaders like Harry Belafonte and Dr. Cornel West. And what Harry Belafonte has advised us to do, if you're going to do it, go all out. Flood the jail systems, because he said that's what was effective in the 60s during the civil rights movement. Flood the system. Have people who are unemployed and can come and be arrested and spend time in jail until the lawyers can come get them out. Have people who have nothing to do but come down and protest and make noise and aggravate the police. So I feel that all of it plays a part. All of it has, everyone has a role in the movement.
And I think she's very right on that. I knew at the very beginning that I would have to change my hat at some point. Instead of being an activist, I would have to become the legislator that I am. And I'm in that process right now. And so for the first month, people saw me out on the street. I'm still out on the street because we were together on Saturday. But it is important that we maintain these protests because there are still things that are happening. The situation she's talking about on Saturday, the police officers started saying, "Get off of Andy Worm's property." He's a private business owner who said that we can stay there. That's his property. His mother passed away during this whole thing, and he still said, "Stay on my property." And so the police officers were trying to get us off of his property. That's his personal property, his business property. And we didn't have to leave because we had his permission. And the police officers were telling us that we had to get off. Well, you know what? Go tell Andy Worm that.
You know, but one of the things that I have heard, and perhaps you have too, is that some of the protests, you know, and I understand what's going on, but some of the protests, which involve traffic, for instance, tend to make people mad who otherwise might be your allies in this whole conversation.
That is true. And I have to tell you that I did go, I don't know if you were there then, but I did go to the police chief on Saturday, and I asked him to work with us and shut down the street because we had all of these things happening on Saturday, and it was growing. It was growing by the minute, and I said, please cooperate with us like you did the first Sunday. And he willfully closed down the street the first Sunday after Mike Brown was shot. And so I was trying to do that so people could peacefully demonstrate, and so people would know where to go and work in collaboration with the chief, which a lot of people don't trust him right now. And he said, no, why? And that is the disconnect. He didn't understand why we were trying to protest after people have been shackled and thrown down to the ground. And we had police officers who were threatening us. Are you kidding me? That's the insensitivity that this community is facing from police officers every single day.
Where is all of this taking us, do you think? I mean, looking back over the last 6 weeks and looking at it, where is it taking us?
Well, I hope that it takes us to a place where a young black woman or young black man can walk from Airport Road to Kinloch and not be followed. An individual in the light of day is not targeted because they're black and they drive a nice car. People aren't targeted for just being black going through Ferguson or Florissant for that matter, or down Jennings Station Road. We want transparency. We want respect. Most importantly, we want to be treated like we are American citizens because we are. And we have not been treated like American citizens whatsoever.
Jeanette, to add to that?
She said everything.
Okay. Well, we have a lot of calls already, and I have a few more things I'd like to talk about before we go to the phones. But I do want to bring in Christine calling from Ferguson, because I'm gathering she might take exception to something that's been said. But let's find out. Christine, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just am frustrated because I'm a resident of Ferguson who was there on Saturday and witnessed all of the events that occurred and watched it unfold. And these are not peaceful protesters, as the two guests are indicating. These are folks that are urban terrorists. They are bullying the residents. They are bullying the business owners. I watched them close off the street. I watched it. So I'm frustrated when I hear these young ladies talk about they weren't standing in the street. I'm telling you, I saw it with my own eyes. I watched them surround a vehicle, attempt to bust the windows and target a white driver. These are not peaceful protesters, and I really wish you would get a perspective that includes what the residents are going through. I want to have a dialogue with anyone to talk about how we resolve this, but these folks that are protesting are not peaceful. I was also at the Ferguson Farmers Market as a merchant, watching them circle and intimidate the folks that were trying to shop there.
Wow.
And these folks are not trying to be peaceful. They come in with an axe to grind. I would welcome a conversation. I tried to talk to one of the protesters who was stepping into the street on Saturday and said, I really want to support your effort, but when you're standing here trying to close down these businesses, he said to me, have we shut you down yet? There's no attempt to even have a dialogue with me. There was another young man that wouldn't even look me in the eye. I wanted to have a conversation with him, and he wouldn't even look at me. So I'm a really frustrated resident who wants to help resolve this. But urban terrorism is not going to resolve this. I want to work with anybody who has...
Christine, thank you. Christine, we have the point, and I don't mean to interrupt you other than the fact that we have to take a break in a moment, but I do want to get a response from our guests, and thank you so much for the call. Senator?
Well, again, this is a tale of two cities. Anytime you see me out on the street, my name is Maria Chappelle Nadal. I have a big afro. Please walk up to me and have a conversation with me, because I am not a terrorist. I don't have any terrorists in my family, and I believe in peaceful engagement. As I have stated, that the only thing that I will participate in is a peaceful demonstration. I already asked Chief Jackson to shut down the road, because there were people who wanted to shut down the road. And the police have abided by that in the past, but he chose not to on a day that was very frustrating for people. He chose not to. So anyone who was upset about people sitting in the street, it's because the chief would not cooperate with me. And that goes to the point that so many people are inconsiderate of people who are hurting and intimidated every single day. Why is it that there are business owners in Ferguson who are supporting us as protesters? Why is that happening? Because they believe in the movement. I mean, they're providing water to us. They're letting us demonstrate on their property. What I just heard, unfortunately, is someone who's very rare in Ferguson, because the cars that go by, they are honking for us, black and white. It's not just a black thing, black and white. Bus drivers, utility workers, people are supporting us. And I would never engage in a demonstration that is violent.
Janetta, a tale of two cities.
I'm so confused by what is a urban terrorist. If there are any terrorists on the streets, because I was shot and because I was tear gassed four or five times by the police, I would say the police are the urban terrorists if we're going to call someone a terrorist. I myself personally am not a terrorist, have never been one. I'm not interested in being one at all. Like Maria said, if you see me, you can come speak to me. There was a lady who was trying to get through, and she was frustrated, and she didn't understand why she had, they had blocked the street off, but they were giving people an outlet. You can make a left or you can make a right.
That's right.
By the Andy Worm shop. And she was just confused and trying to understand, why do I have to do that? And I went up to her and I said, ma'am, can you please just make the left turn? And she was like, that's all I wanted was a please. And I was like, you're welcome. And she made the turn. So it's not like there's no communication. There's always, if a situation looks like it's getting hostile, people will go over who can calm things down and de-escalate the situation.
Exactly. And that's the role that I've played in several of these situations, is to keep, try to keep the crowd calm, but also for those bystanders who are trying to get out, we do make sure that they have a way out.
I have to take a break now, but I'll also invite any of our listeners who want to get some of that dialogue we've just been talking about going on this program. They're welcome to do so. My guests in studio are Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal of the 14th District, includes Ferguson, and also with us is Janata Elzey, a student at St. Louis Community College, who has been very, very active in the Ferguson situation since the shooting death of Michael Brown. We'll come back. We'll take your calls after a couple more questions from me, but stay with us. We will take lots of phone calls today. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back as we'll be continuing our conversation, sort of updating the situation in Ferguson some 6 weeks after the shooting death of Michael Brown. But before we continue with State Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal and student Janata Elzey, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. German drug company Merck says it has agreed to buy St. Louis-based chemical firm Sigma Aldrich for $17 billion. Sigma Aldrich has about 1,700 employees in the St. Louis area and supplies chemicals and laboratory equipment to government and commercial research facilities. The Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education will hold a public hearing tonight to discuss the progress of the Riverview Gardens School District. The North St. Louis County District has been unaccredited since 2007. And the first of several town hall meetings in Ferguson will be held tonight. The city is holding the sessions, it says, to clear up misconceptions about its government and to listen to residents about changes they would like to see considered in the wake of the fatal police shooting of Michael Brown. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for more on all of these stories. And by the way, we reached out to the city of Ferguson to join us for a few minutes on today's program to talk about the goal of the community sessions. However, the PR firm representing the city did not respond to our requests. We'll have more information during the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Let me come back and talk about the series of town hall meetings, which will be kicked off tonight. They're obviously represented as an opportunity to clear the air and consider what everybody is thinking. One of the things that struck me is no media is going to be invited, and nor is anybody else outside of Ferguson. Janata, I guess that means you can't go.
I can't go. I'm very sad about that. I don't have a Ferguson address.
I can't go either, but I represent Ferguson. I do hope, if the mayor is listening, that the state senator of Ferguson is invited.
Well, perhaps we'll find out. The PR firm, as we've just indicated, is not responding to any requests from us, but we shall see. What about the Justice Department and its activities with regard? It's the Justice Department which actually put the restrictions on tonight's meeting. Thoughts about that?
Well, you know what? They need to make the best decision for the community. I do know that looking at a lot of the video and the pictures from many of these meetings has intensified how people are feeling. It may be their objective. I can't put words in their mouth. I don't know what their strategy is. But it may be a matter of security. It may be a matter of keeping the community calm. And it may be a matter of really getting the essence of what people are feeling in Ferguson, because this is the source of where all of the tension is coming from right now.
Yeah. The Justice Department is also sponsoring what they're called an initiative to build trust.
Yes.
That is something else that's going on. And the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division representatives are meeting Wednesday at 7 o'clock at Flow Valley Community College Student Center, investigating allegations that Ferguson's police department officers are guilty of many constitutional rights violations, including using deadly force. Washington University law professor Peter Joy is joining us now by phone. He's director of the university's Criminal Justice Clinic. Peter, nice to have you with us again.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
What do you make of the Department of Justice's many fronts in this situation?
Well, I think the first thing it does is it demonstrates that the Department of Justice has a lot of different moving parts. And so it has an investigative arm, it has a prosecution arm, and also the Community Relations Service arm that, according to its own statement, provides confidential mediation, facilitation, training, and consulting services to help communities enhance their ability to alleviate, solve, and respond to future conflicts more effectively. And I think that probably bears on the fact that at least the meeting scheduled for this evening is going to be one in which it wants just members of the community present. I guess I would be surprised if some of the later meetings that are planned are not opened up, at least to the press. But my sense is that the Department of Justice arm here is trying to get a pulse of what people living in Ferguson think without feeling somehow compromised by other people being there that might somehow be influencing what the residents themselves are saying.
And on Wednesday's session, they are looking for private conversations, from what I can gather. Well, what do you think they would be looking for in that regard?
And that's right. It is Wednesday, not this evening. I mean, I think, you know, they'll probably be looking for what the residents' own stories are about how they're being treated by the city services, including the police in Ferguson. And also, I think they're going to be looking at what the residents themselves see as the major issues. And for that, that's why I think they want to sort of filter out other voices and just hear what the residents in Ferguson are feeling, are thinking, and more importantly, experiencing and have experienced over the last several years.
Is there any sense, do you think, that the DOJ, Department of Justice, is kind of elbowing out the local authorities who are also looking to all of this?
No, not by any means, at least not at this point, because the Department of Justice engages in a very thorough process, which I guess that's a coded word for slow process. So I think the local authorities, both in terms of the grand jury, the state grand jury, considering Officer Darren Wilson for possible charges, as well as whatever else is going on at the state level, that they're going to reach conclusions long before the Department of Justice finishes its work.
And so where does the Department of Justice take all of this that it has learned?
Well, right now, you know, if we go to the investigatory arm, it's trying to determine whether or not there's been a pattern in practice of civil rights violations. You know, I learned that, I guess, on September the 8th, they filed their first request for documents and information with the City of Ferguson Police Department. In that request for information runs 9 pages long, and just my review of it tells me that it's probably going to take the Ferguson Police Department at least 60 or 90 days to put together all of the information that's being requested, unless they have one of the best record-keeping systems in the country, because it's asking for a lot of information that I'm sure the police department has, but perhaps you know, has not collated and considered in the form that the Department of Justice is asking for.
Let me just ask our guests in studio about this 60 to 90 days before we are likely to get anything from the Justice Department. That's, you know, you were talking about being a little impatient a while ago. That's a long time.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I know everything has a process and it takes time, but 60 to 90 days, it didn't take 60 days for Darren Wilson to decide he wanted to kill Mike Brown. It didn't take 60 days for the police to decide that they wanted to start shooting whatever kind of bullet that they felt like using at protesters in the street. Like, it blows my mind that it takes so long.
It didn't take 6 minutes for them to start tear gassing us
right
on August 11th.
Right.
But Peter Joy, on the other hand, I suppose a case can be made that you want to be thorough and you want to take a certain amount of time to make sure that you get it right.
Well, actually, and let me make one thing clear. I'm saying I think it would take the police department at least 60 or 90 days, perhaps, to put together all of this information, unless they really either hired other people or diverted people from their present duties to just focusing on this. So it could be shorter if it's all hands on deck, and maybe the city hires some temporary people to come in and help with it. So it could be shorter. But even if it is shorter, even if somehow the city of Ferguson was able to get all of this information to the Justice Department in 30 days, I would still expect it to take even longer than 90 days before the Department of Justice is able to analyze everything and come out with some position. So I realize that everybody's impatient, but the federal government, the Department of Justice, in this type of matter does not move with lightning speed, although I understand that many of us believe that it should move faster, but I just don't see it moving that fast.
Even at 60 to 90 days, it could be that the Justice Department has something going before any kind of decision is reached by the local grand jury concerning Officer Wilson.
Yeah, well, though, I guess I would just be more than surprised, and I think actually if it takes the grand jury as long as January to reach a decision, that there'll have to be some explanation for why it took that long. In the state of Missouri, we have people who face capital murder charges, you know, the death penalty, and they have trials throughout the state in a week, maybe 2 weeks, sometimes less than a week, and that's somebody who's facing the death penalty, and that's a full trial where we have the defense doing a cross-examination. In the grand jury room, I know they're being extremely thorough, and I think that's what they should be, but it's still hard to imagine that it would take until January. And I think that maybe that's just the outside limit, and I would expect a decision before January.
Before we let you go, Peter Joy, I think Senator Nadal has something for you.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that conversation. As we are waiting for an outcome from DOJ, that is where organizations such as Heal St. Louis and Eyes on Ferguson pick up, because we're there every single day. And we are trying to keep people calm and direct their attention to what is productive, whether that is registering to vote or taking civic engagement classes. While we are waiting, we can't just sit. We can't just protest. We have to organize at the local level, at the county level, at the state level, and at the federal level. And so my constituents, as you have heard earlier, minus the phone call, what they want to do is to be empowered politically. And that's where what I am trying to do, along with other representatives in the community, is really get people into a place where they can move forward without having to feel as though they're going to be targeted in any way.
Right. Peter Joy, anything you'd like to say before we say goodbye?
No, I guess just thank you, and I wish your current panelists much luck in their endeavors.
Peter Joy of Washington University School of Law, thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go to the phones until we have to take our next break. We will begin with Ron calling from Ferguson. Ron, go ahead. You're on the air.
I wanted to make one statement. I said if people had voted, there'd be no need for protest. The main issues that deal with Ferguson are the same in every municipality in St. Louis County except for U City. So I would like for your guests to tell me, in the neighborhoods that they live in, are the police represented by the diversity of the neighborhood, and do they have any unfair practices in those areas? That's where the protests need to be everywhere. And they need to just have it once, and then people need to get to work.
Ron, thank you so much.
No different than any other community out there, and there needs to be changes in all of them.
Ron, thank you for the call. I think sorry to interrupt there, but the senator wants to respond. I'll point out, I think the voter turnout last time in Ferguson was, what, 12%?
Yes, it was, but I have to tell you, I'm really proud of the municipality that I live in, which is University City, and I want to say that the St. Louis Post-Dispatch reported on that. But years ago, like over 10 years ago, our city council and community said it is not right that we have all of these police officers that don't look like us. So it was on our agenda in the community. It was the community's agenda to have a police force that looked like us, and not just black, but also having more women who are officers. So we're very proud. And we have a black police chief who's awesome. But that community wanted it and desired it and demanded it. And so that's the difference. Yes, we are way more politically active in University City. We have a history of that. But in Ferguson, it is different. And so we have to take that kind of energy and effort into other places in St. Louis and in Missouri so that there are not communities that have police departments that are not reflective of the constituents that live there.
Let's take another call before our break. We'll bring in Bill calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Bill.
Yes, good morning. Nice show. I've heard several times in your show the question, are these demonstrations disruptive or counterproductive? And that makes me really angry. As my law professor Hurwitz used to say 40 years ago almost, it's intuitively obvious, even to the most casual of observers, that without these demonstrations, nothing was going to get done to change the wrongs that exist and that cause this. And nobody is going to should condone the throwing of Molotov cocktails at people. But people are naturally angry, and that sort of thing is going to happen. And instead of focusing on the negative of what could be done differently in the demonstrations, although that's important, people should focus on what needs to be done to change the unfair things that are being done that cause people to get angry. I've been in the civil rights poverty movement for a long time. I was in a VISTA volunteer in 1968. My second day on the job was the day Dr. King was killed, and I was in a grocery store when rocks
Bill,
were thrown through the window.
Bill, okay, we have your point. Sorry to interrupt. I have to take a break. I want to get a response. That's Bill Haas. I'm sure I recognize the voice, and I just want to clarify. I think the point that I was raising a while ago was, do these protests tend to make enemies out of allies? I think that's the point I was making. But in any case, so let's get a response. Who would like to respond to Mr. Haas?
I think the people who want to be allies make themselves known. Even when Saturday, when people were frustrated about not being able to drive down Florissant Road, people would tell you, I'm just trying to, like a lady had a child in her back seat who was having an asthma attack. She let it known, and people let them through. The buses, they let the buses through. They let everyone who was communicating with the protesters, letting them know this is our need and this is why we have to go.
But they communicated. And see, mm-hmm. that's the thing. Communication is key. I tried to communicate with the chief, mm-hmm. Jackson, on what the protesters wanted, and he didn't listen. You know, I'm not just there as an individual. I am there as a senator who sees the big picture. And sometimes you need to listen to the people who see the big picture. And unfortunately, because of the lack of conversation and understanding, we've ended up in some of the situations that we're in right now. If anyone asked me prior to being tear gassed, is this the right approach? I would say, no, absolutely not. You do not want to have military-style enforcement facing people who have been traumatized for 10 years of their life. That is not the approach that you take.
That's State Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal, who is with us in studio. Her 14th district includes Ferguson, and we're talking about Ferguson 6 weeks 6 weeks after the shooting death of Michael Brown. She's in studio along with Janetta Elzey, a student who has been active in the Ferguson scene since the shooting of Michael Brown. We'll come back, take more of your calls, and have more conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue to talk about the situation in Ferguson 6 weeks after the shooting death of Michael Brown. I have with me in studio State Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal and student Janetta Elzey. Before I go to the phones, we have a number of calls. I just want to point out some of the things that have happened and get a quick response to you since the shooting death of Michael Brown. Governor Nixon creates the Office of Community Engagement, something he's done just recently. The city of Ferguson is talking about changing its policy of fines and fees, which has been a sticking point and a sore point with many of the communities. They're looking at the possibility of purchasing body cameras for use by police officers, which is one of the things that's been demanded by the citizenry there. Centene Corporation is going to move a facility to Ferguson, create a couple of hundred jobs, as I recall. Emerson has got a plan whereby it's going to help fund and encourage jobs and education programs. Community center is opening. It seems to me and also a civilian review board is something that's being considered by the Ferguson City Council. It seems to me that a lot of good things and positive things are happening following the death of Michael Brown, Senator.
Absolutely, and I am encouraged by all of those things. But what your audience has to be mindful of are the details. For example, the review board in Ferguson, looking at the details of that, there are a lot of my constituents in Ferguson who don't like the details because there's no real authority in other matters. When it comes to Emerson, I have recently gotten phone calls and questions, how is the investment of Emerson any different than what they did last year? When it comes to the community engagement, the questions that I get, why didn't this exist before? What are they doing now? Are they on the ground? Are they going to be helping with constituent matters, people who are getting evicted from their apartments? So the devil is in the details. It all sounds good on the surface, but when it gets to application time, is it really going to be effective?
Well, a point I would make is the fact that they could be running away from Ferguson now, given what's happened there.
Absolutely.
But they're not doing that.
Absolutely. Well, they've been there for 70 years. Yeah. And it is a company that I'm very supportive of. There's a lot of investment in schools already that
exist. I'm not talking just about Emerson now. About the other things.
And Centene, the incredible investment. But my obligation as a legislator is not to look at the surface and just the words investment. What we are teaching in our classes is to look beyond what is in the newspaper and see what those so-called jobs or investments are actually going to do for Ferguson. So here's a question that comes up, Don. Are those new hires going to be Ferguson residents? Well, that's what came up at our civic engagement meeting last night. Are they going to be people with PhDs, or are they going to be people who live in Ferguson who actually need jobs?
That, of course, remains to be seen.
Exactly.
I think there's some indication that that's what they want to do. But while we're talking economics, and there's plenty to talk about with regard to that part of the story, let's bring in Pianki, I believe is the way it's pronounced, and get a take on the economic situation. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Don, and thanks to your guests, Maria and the other lady. Well, yes, economic is a major point, and I really want to, I'm happy the way your response is coming from the guests. The Post-Dispatch printed an article on August the 24th, which mentioned about the imbalance, which Maria so eloquently spoke about how U-City has addressed that imbalance. And that is the racial makeup of the police department, the fire department, City Hall, Public Works, and although I know that they don't have control, but the children from Ferguson go there, the school district. It's a great, grave imbalance there that needs to be and should be corrected. My child could not go to Crestwood, 25 miles away, and get on the police force the way we see outsiders, or should we say others who don't live in that district. They have an opportunity to do this. And this is something that's been mentioned in the papers, especially the fire department. It's been mentioned in the papers decades ago, John, and this has to stop.
Right. Pianki, thank you for the call. You know, I certainly agree with the notion of the responsibility and community responsibility. But again, you've got to get people who will run for office, who will change the status quo, and then you got to get people to go out and vote. I mean, that to me is the answer to the problem. You're agreeing with me.
I do agree with you. And you know what? Someone said this earlier, maybe 3 weeks ago, and it's so true. Barack Obama got a lot of people out registered to vote. The problem that we're facing right now is that people aren't going out. There is nothing that inspires them. Right now, what inspires my residents is Michael Brown. I cannot encourage or impassion people enough to vote for either the Democrat or the Republican who is running for county executive or prosecuting attorney. All that people are thinking about is Mike Brown. And if you don't have a plan, and this is very key right now, if these candidates who are running in November don't have a plan for young people who are being targeted, this community is not going to vote for them. It's not a matter of being Democrat or Republican. They are hurting. They are injured. And they want a response from the people who are running for elected office. If you've not been on the ground, if you don't understand where these young people are coming from, then you're never going to have the real answer. And so they have to answer to my community, and they're waiting for it right now.
Janetta, the last time we were together here in the studio, we were talking about the same thing. I recall you and Tef Poe and the minister who was here were talking about how important it is to get young people engaged, to get them interested in running for office, and to keep this the momentum that is being built here from kind of disintegrating. Over, do you sense that young people still have the fire in their belly that they had 6 weeks ago?
Absolutely, because that could be any one of us at any given time. Only because since Mike Brown has been murdered, two other black men have been murdered in St. Louis alone. That could be anybody. That could be my dad. That could be my friend Larry, who's in the waiting room. That could be anybody. It could be me. So I'm not going to give up the fight, because it happened in my hometown that I'm so proud to be from. This is St. Louis that I love, and you're killing the black people that I'm a part of.
The point is getting young people engaged in the process so that they will make a difference from the inside rather than talking about it from the outside.
Well, that's on all these organizations to go and get to the people. I don't think it's a necessary of how do we get the people to come to us? You need to go to the people. Where you want to find the youth, they're in front of the Ferguson Police Department. They're organizing to do demonstrations downtown or in Clayton or wherever. Wherever there's an opportunity to disrupt and do any type of civil disobedience by protesting and making noise and making people uncomfortable, that's where the youth are, and that's where these organizations need to go.
And I would like to pick up on that. That's also where these elected officials earn their credibility. If you're not on the street, you have no street credibility, period. And you're not going to inspire a group of people to vote one way or the other without having that street credibility. And that's what's up. This is one of the most important times in history for St. Louis. Huey Newton, Angela Davis, these people were in their teens when they were advocating. They're still historic people. They were in their teens when they started out. These young people, they're not waiting for someone who is older, who's removed from their experiences, to tell them what to do. There is such a disconnect. They need someone who's there with them on the ground.
All the major movements have basically been started by young people, whether it was ending the Vietnam War or advances in the civil rights struggle. There's no question about that. The question that I keep wondering about and keep asking is it going to happen here? Is it going to dissipate? Is it going to, over a period of time, all the people who've been in the streets and promising to do the things that should be done, that they do it, that they follow
through?
If people
don't get answers to all these many questions that they have, I think the movement is going to take itself to another level, because people are going to react.
Let's take another call. We'll bring in Allie calling from St. Louis. Allie, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling in response to the young lady who called the protesters urban terrorists. I resent that remark wholeheartedly. My 20-year-old junior at Herso University has been out there since day one. And who was Maria's intern who got hit by a car? My 14-year-old son, who is 4.6 at Live for Life Academy, got his foot ran over by a car, and he is far from a terrorist. So I just want to address that concern. Before she goes around calling people terrorists, has she ever been pulled over by Ferguson police for doing nothing? She ever been pulled over by St. Anne police for driving while black? So before she's so quick to call people terrorists, she ought to get her facts together.
Thank you, Allie, for the call. Do you know Allie?
Yes,
Senator?
I do. Okay. I do. And let me tell you, I had a very interesting morning yesterday. I talked to a bunch of mothers. I didn't intend to do this, but I was on the phone with a bunch of mothers from my constituent, Queen, who was shackled on, her feet were shackled, and she was intentionally pushed down. She now has a broken back because police officers pushed her to the ground. My intern, who was run over, and her young brother, there are a lot of people who are very angry right now. They're very angry. And this is one of the reasons why we have to organize, and we can't have any airs about ourselves. This is the greatest opportunity for African Americans, for young people in the movement. It is the greatest opportunity to get more services, more resources for our community. And if we ask for the crumbs, we are going to get absolutely nothing. If we are divided, we're going to get absolutely nothing. This is not an agenda for just Black people. This is for people who believe in justice, people who believe in equality, people who believe in the standard of living that someone in Chesterfield has. Every person in my district ought to be respected for who they are and not degraded and not thought to be less than human or less than 100% American. And that's what's happening every single day. There is so much trauma. There's so much trauma right now. What we should have had instead of guns on the streets, we should have had counselors on the streets. Counseling our young people who have been degraded for years. You just heard a 14-year-old. What's in his, he heard the N-word. He was called the N-word. You know, he's 14 years old. Well,
I'm sure he's heard it before.
Yeah, but he should not have had to hear that. Yeah. He should not have had to hear that.
Janetta, you attended the PBS forum yesterday, hosted, moderated by Gwen Ifill, correct? Can you quickly give me some sense of what went on there, what people were talking about?
It was very interesting to hear dialogue between what you, when people say the two sides of Ferguson. There were Ferguson residents who lived on the Black side, and there were Ferguson residents who lived on the white side. And it was very interesting to hear, because I'm basically around predominantly Black people. I know how we all feel in the moment, but it was very interesting to hear how the white, older, middle-aged men were feeling and what they think about Black people, specifically young Black men. It was lots of I don't feel like they were in the know, or there was a very big disconnect between how we're still people at the end of the day. I think Ms. Ifill did a wonderful job of bouncing in between conversations and getting everyone's viewpoints. The chiefs from, he was from, where was he from? They had one from,
they're Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. Was there one from Chicago, I feel?
No, there are two that I recall.
Okay. The chiefs that were there, the one from Cincinnati did an awesome job telling how they rebuilt the trust in the community after the riots
there. They had huge riots there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about the training that came in and how they got the police to start looking at people as humans and not suspects again.
This is going to air, I think, later in the week, Friday night. Folks can look at their listings for that. Do you think events like this do much good?
I think it was very productive because it gave people who aren't normally in the room together to hear each other. It gave them a space to do that. I feel that the middle-aged white guy who kept saying, you know, he has no idea how young Black men feel. Okay, well, you're in a room full of young Black men. Listen to how they feel. And afterwards, he was having conversations with them to try to understand how we experience America totally different than white middle-aged men do.
Maria, were you there?
I was there. Mm. I wasn't there the whole time because I had to go teach a class on civic engagement, so I had to leave early, and that was a productive class. What I would say, this is the best opportunity that we have to build bridges, to be completely honest with what our biases are, and not be discouraged by some of the things that we hear, but see it as a unique opportunity. The only example that I can use is Katrina. And everyone remembers 2005 and what we saw on TV. And then there was a family of 28 people who came to University City. And they were slowly getting out of cars, going into a house with only two bedrooms, and we responded. and we started calling out to people, leaders, getting apartments, getting clothing, getting prescription drugs, getting everything that this family needed because they had no home. And there's a difference between the point of this is when you see something on TV and it just grabs your heart, and then you have something that's right in your neighborhood where you can respond and you can follow up. That opportunity allows us to show who we really are in our hearts. And people have a lot of opinions about what some of us do. But I believe that we should always be among the people, always be among the most frail, the most angry, the most hurt. And this opportunity is for white, black, Asian, Hispanic to come together and openly discuss what our biases are and try to get beyond that and be respectful of who we are.
Going to have to leave it at that. You've just been listening to State Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal. Her 14th district includes Ferguson, and that, of course, is what we've been talking about, the Ferguson situation 6 weeks or so after the death of Michael Brown. Senator, thank you so much for being with us. Good to see you again. And Janetta Ilsey is also with us. She was with us a couple of weeks ago talking about young people. In a word, Janetta, optimistic, pessimistic about the future?
I'm optimistic all the time.
Atta girl. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us. And perhaps we can do this again in a month or two and see where we are. And hopefully progress will have been made and everybody feels a little bit better about what's going on. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with UMSL historian Fred Fowles about his new book documenting the history of St. Louis. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.